The Football Show on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
So, Football Show, here we are, Kenny. What were you asking me there? Go on, ask.
What was that?
I was asking
one of the lads for a bag of crisps, to be honest with you.
Is that what?
No, but he actually came back, surprised me. He came back with an offer of a few munchies.
Ooh.
That took me back.
Ooh.
Because he's gone proper retro there, isn't he? A packet of munchies.
I'd have munchies and a cup of tea if it was going, lads.
My granny used to have them. I'm trying to visualise where back in the day. My
munchies.
Granny, I think it was. Munchies, are they still around? Clearly.
They're in the vending machine outside.
Really?
Were munchies in still your granny's?
Market, still a big market for munchies. That little square shaped.
I know what munchies
chocolates
are.
With a bit of crisp.
Everybody knows what munchies
everybody
are.
Everybody knows what, yeah?
Yeah.
They're still available
they're
broadly around
the
place.
Vending machine outside, which is not.
I'm not talking about the vending, I'm talking about.
In a shop?
Yeah. On the street.
If they're in the vending machine, they're in the shop. Vending machine is a smaller selection than a shop. I didn't think they were in your granny's time. I thought they were
munchies,
relatively
new. I'm growing up, I remember munchies being a little bit cut above, maybe. Would I put an extra 5p or something a bit more expensive?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Then your big time and your triggers and all that, they were a little bit cut above.
They were, to be fair, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what are we saying? We will have some munchies.
Well, he hasn't brought them. He's offered them, but I'm seeing them as yet.
Our planning, I think you were just as I came in asking me, how long do we have here, were you? Is that what you were going to say?
All right.
Is that what you were asking me?
Yeah, is this us now? Follow
this
on.
This is us. We're on. We've got about, we'll chat about the game for maybe 10, 12 minutes or so. And then we'll have David Priest talking to us about Gordon Banks.
Good,
passed
nice.
Away this evening, or this afternoon. So it's nil all at Old Trafford. We've been talking about this game, obviously, as it's unfolded. We'll bring you a clip from Graeme Souness in just a second, which is out there. Enda, got that Graeme Souness clip, do we? It's on the way in a second. He's been talking about that game. So what are we making of it, Kenny? It's
a little bit maybe
finally
underwhelming.
Balanced. Yeah,
yeah, you're finally balanced. Probably, papering over the cracks. Yeah, in terms of the quality, probably a little bit disappointed. Sense a little bit of tension there. Just a little bit disappointed. United started off, got on the front foot when after PSG kind of hyped the pitch, had a little bit of success, would have kind of disrupted them. But I think they've dropped off, almost like lost a little bit of confidence and just kind of withdrawn into their shell. A little bit. Now, I know I said before the game, I could maybe sue some at times to draw PSG, but there's a fine line for me between dropping off and being passive for too long and giving the opposition team plenty of touches in your half the pitch to open you up and dropping off into a defensive shape in your own half the pitch, but very quickly finding that trigger to go and press the ball and hunt the ball back and, you know, deny opposition teams real quality time on the ball in your half the pitch. And I don't think they've struck that balance, United. They've been too passive in their own half for a period in that game, and I've been a little bit nervous when PSG have had a little bit too many touches, kind of 30, 35 yards from the Manchester United goal. So a couple of little tweaks, I'd suggest maybe at half-time, and obviously interesting in terms of the substitutions.
Well, that's the thing. So Martial, he didn't look right to me for a lot of the game, just a touch off.
Yeah.
Just a touch off.
You
and
could
then
see
he, then he went down later on and he was holding, I mean, you thought it might have been his groin. There's something up with him anyway, so he's not 100%. And then it looked like Sanchez was coming off the bench and the camera cut to the sad side of Jesse Lingard on the ground. Suddenly you're Solskjaer thinking, ah.
So you've got to keep thinking your feet as a manager, you know, that you're going to make a split decision.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very close to halftime, probably made it a little bit easier.
Just we're seeing Sanchez out warming up now, so you can expect he's coming on for one of them.
Well, he's definitely coming off. The interesting one, like you said, the big bone of contention will be if Lingard and Martial doesn't come out for the second half, that kind of second substitution for me will be absolutely key. Mm. The cameras is on Mata at the moment. He's stripped. We spoke about potentially Lukaku or Mata and the differences, the different qualities which they have. But the looks of it, it looks like potentially it's going to be Mata going to lean towards him.
Well, what we have at the moment is Sanchez and Mata warming up together. So we have Mata in his full kit. His number 8 jersey there, and we have Sanchez, the bottoms are off. He's got a training top on. That could mean he's coming on too.
So
they're both being spoken to now. Michael Carrick's over speaking to Alexis Sanchez right now, and that looks like he's coming on as well.
So Lukaku's scoffing there. The wine gums in the dressing room at the moment. Hasn't taken a layer off, and these two are out actively doing a warm up on the pitch. So it's pretty obvious in terms of the substitution. So I don't think it's a right or wrong at the moment. Like I said, Mata, in terms of his quality, the big occasion, he won't be fazed.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tension there out on the pitch. So I'm sure the manager will be hoping a little bit of quality from him to get on the ball and get United playing in the opposition half, which they haven't been able to do. So he'd be the one in terms of maybe linking up with Pogba, getting into those little pockets of space, getting turned and trying to get kind of Rashford and Sanchez into the game higher up the pitch. So I can understand it. I think there's a just as strong an argument for getting Mata on the pitch as there is Lukaku. Though potentially myself, I probably would have leaned towards Lukaku for the reasons that we said.
Niall Quinn's been speaking on Virgin Media about United's first half performance. Have a listen.
For me, this is Manchester United playing against a team that they haven't come up yet in this golden spell in the last couple of months, against a quality like this and the strength and different things that can be done to them that the likes of Fulham can't do to them. And
a bigger test than they've had.
A bigger test. Yeah. Now, they've stood up to the test and they really are... They're dishing it out as best as they can and coping. And it's an edgy game, you know. I won't be surprised if somebody's sent off. Well,
yeah, I think we're expecting a red card as well. The referee is trigger happy.
Yeah, I didn't agree with a couple of the yellow cards. I thought they weren't warranted, actually, first half. But, of course, once he brings them out, he puts himself under more pressure. I thought Kimbembe got away lucky after his early yellow card for a foul later in the first half. I think the referee didn't want to give the free kick because he knew he might have to give him a second yellow card. We've seen Pogba kind of commit himself into a tackle after that initial yellow card. So hopefully common sense will prevail on the behalf of the referee, but also the players themselves have to take a bit of responsibility. In games like this, I think you have to very quickly assess the referee, even in terms of the type of referee that he is, and you might just have to modify your game a little bit. Just don't leave yourself open to receiving the second yellow card.
So it's Mata jogging on. I should remind you as well, Virgin Media Sport is the new home of European football in Ireland. More than 400 UEFA Champions League, Europa League and Nations League games live this season at Virgin Media Sport, exclusive to all Virgin Media TV customers, who can also download the TV Anywhere app and stream all the action whenever and wherever they like. So Mata's come on. I haven't quite seen yet. Is it Martial or Lingard that he's come on for? We'll bring you confirmation of that in a moment. He's over on the right-hand side. Yeah, Sanchez is on too there, Kenny. Near side,
yeah.
They're both on.
Yeah,
so Lingard and Martial both off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, confirmed.
Yeah, it looks like Mata playing off the right and Sanchez off the left. Be interesting now, the two PSG full-backs, Bernat in particular, who's very comfortable getting into forward areas. He has a look at Mata and thinks, I fancy me chances here now, running off his shoulder.
Yeah.
Don't think he can live with me over a straight sprint over 30 yards.
If I'm Lukaku in the dressing room, I'm thinking, really?
Really? Yeah, well, this is a conversation for another day, and this is going to rear its head in the summer because there's no way Lukaku is going to hang around after the summer and play a bit part, particularly when these big games come around. He's going to find himself on the bench, but that's a conversation for another day. Personally, I would have had him on down the middle, throw Rashford down the side, just keep that real pace, energy in the pitch. Mata obviously doesn't give you that. He's got different attributes, I know. Even just Lukaku, even kind of set pieces, silly thing, you know, crossing corner kicks, you know, he's a real target in there, can bulldoze his way into good situations, even defensively, defending set pieces into the box. Small detail like that in isolation mightn't matter, but it kind of all added up for me. I'd still, I don't know, his presence on the pitch for me give me a little bit more assurance as a Manchester United player. But Mata, still the quality he has, can still help the team, but big decisions for the manager to make.
Yeah.
You know, a lot at stake now. Knockout competition, Solskjaer, first real situation where you've looked at him and thought, right, you've got big decisions now in terms of your substitutions.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, so nil all there, 47 minutes in the clock. We're going to take a very short break. We're back with David Priest talking about Gordon Banks.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the new and improved Boyle Sports Bet Builder.
Now with 44 markets to choose from on every match.
Carlos Alberto, that's dangerous. Giardino. Only left Cooper standing. Kelly! What a save! Gordon Banks! Take that out of the net! And that's the danger for England, split by a quick raid. And this, the save of the World Cup.
Yeah, it certainly was the save of the World Cup, the save of several World Cups, to tell you the truth. Gordon Banks has passed away overnight at the age of 81. His former club Stoke shared the sad news that he had passed away peacefully in his sleep overnight. He was in goal for the 66th triumph for England, and also, as you heard there, against Brazil at the 1970 World Cup in Mexico. We're joined by David Preece, a former footballer, played over 300 games as a professional, now a writer and football coach, and a man who is no stranger to the art of goalkeeping. Evening, David.
Good evening, gents.
So, Gordon Banks, how much of Banks have you seen? It's just so we're not putting you under too much pressure here. Is it kind of the highlights reel we've all seen, or would you have been nerdy enough to go back and watch hours of footage?
Yeah, well, of course, as you're limited to what we can see of him, but he's somebody I've analysed in the past and done pieces on, so I've had to do a lot of research for it. And he's somebody who deserves all the platitudes and all the praise that he's getting at the moment, because it's easy to eulogise about somebody who's just passed, but I think in Gordon's case, it's not just as a footballer, as a man. I think all the praise that he gets is well deserved.
Mm. We'll get into the wider achievements in a moment, but would you give us your analysis of the save against Pelé? Because that's something that I guess everybody listening is very familiar with.
Yeah, I think it's something where the mechanics of the save is, as many layers to it, but it's... Even in the first instance, when the cross is coming from Jorginho, he's got tossed out at his near post area, so that's where he's placed. And once the ball goes beyond him, now he's got a little bit of a chance to look up and recognise what's happening in front of him. And he makes up a lot of ground going across his goal. And the one thing that stands out for me is the fact that he doesn't just go with his momentum. It could be easy just to gamble and see and think that the ball's going to go down to his right, and use the momentum that his pace has built up to cheat almost and gamble. But he doesn't do that. If you just look at the footage, he just pauses slightly as Pelé is about to head the ball. So it gives him the best chance of saving a ball that's going in any direction.
Mm.
That brief pause, and then he's got to try and get himself going again. And as the ball goes down to his right, the ball's just behind him. And that's the crucial part of the save. It's technically imperfect. So, as a goalkeeper, you always get taught to dive forward towards the ball. Now, the ball's already behind him.
Yeah,
he's lucky in a way that the ball, that Pelé has been able to generate a lot of pace on the ball. And the fact that there's a lot of pace on the ball helps him, because he's just got to get some sort of forward motion with his hand towards the ball and use the pace that's already on the ball to lift it up over the bar. Of course, he's in that moment in time, he's just trying to save the ball. He's not thinking about all this as he goes on. It happens too quickly for him to really take all this in. But it's through hours of training and preparation. That's when your instincts take over. It teaches your instincts to take over.
Yeah, amazing to have you pick it apart like that. There's so much going on, and yet all of it is almost without thought as well, which is the amazing part. Kenny Cunningham's alongside me. We have just watched PSG take the lead from a corner. Kenny, talk us through it. Di Maria with the corner.
Yeah, such a simply worked corner kick. Good build-up play from PSG. Originally, United getting penned back in the edge of their box. Can see the corner. Just an in-swinging ball from Di Maria to the back post. Kimpembe's being marked for Matic. Just gets half a yard. I think Matic is looking at De Gea thinking he's going to come and deal with this. He's a little bit hesitant. And Kimpembe's not even a header. Drops to his left foot. Just volleys it into the top of the net.
Okay. 54 minutes in the clock. Man U 0, PSG 1. We're still with David Preece talking about Gordon Banks. So beyond that amazing save, obviously he's so much more than that save, even though that's how all of us first remember him. First off, he was taller than a lot of keepers of his era, wasn't he?
Yeah, and that's one of the first reasons that you look at him and think that he was a little bit ahead of his time, and not just obviously in his athleticism, but in his approach to the game. We often hear the old adage that you have to be mad to be a goalkeeper, but he was he put a lot of thought into his game. He was a real thinker on the position, and you could tell that in his positioning.
Right.
And his positioning was unnervingly good, and that's helped him make the saves that he made. And a lot of the saves that he made made them look easier. In the footage, it does. You can go back on YouTube or whatever, and you can see a lot of the footage. You will see that he's almost perfect at times, almost too good, because sometimes there's difficult balls that are bouncing into him that he's that look difficult, but it's almost like I liken it to sort of if you watch from like Zidane or a top class outfield player, they don't think about controlling the ball. Mm. You know, they're already one step ahead, and that already takes care of themselves. It was a little bit like that with him, where there was no it didn't look difficult to him. Yeah. And like I said, he just made it look a lot easier than what it actually is. And especially at that time, when you consider no gloves, the ball and the types of pitches that they're playing on, there was a lot of room for something to go wrong in those circumstances.
And this may be tricky for you to answer. I don't know if you know the answer to this, but when he was coming through in the 50s and establishing himself as England's best goalkeeper in the 60s, were there goalkeeping coaches per se, when you talk about his positioning, was he figuring that out both instinctively and maybe also just thinking about the game in his spare time? Or would there have been somebody passing this information on to him? Do we know? Did he have a mentor?
Well, I mean, from what I know, that's like I said, he's a great thinker of the game, and that he was the one that all his theories on the game were sort of self-taught and sort of in his own analysis. I've always said that goalkeepers, the position sort of makes a natural analyst of all of us, simply because we have a lot of time to think during the game, certainly during the 90 minutes.
Yeah.
But it, because of the nature of the game, and we have to be so, or try and be perfect, you've got to put a little bit more thought into what you do rather than just react off of what's going on around you, like maybe a centre midfielder.
Yeah, there was a journalist, Lee Marlowe, tweeted a picture today. I'm sure you may have seen it on Twitter.
Yes.
He interviewed Banks when he was younger, and he mentioned to him that his son played in goal, and Banks sent him, you know, advice, really. And some of it is very innovative, you know, especially when you consider the era that he came through in. So, you know, he's talking about play with a smaller ball was one of the pieces of advice. Playing with a bigger ball will seem so much easier if you've been playing with a smaller one. Play games like table tennis. That will help to sharpen up your reflexes and your hand-to-eye coordination. Throw a tennis ball against the wall and catch it. And be brave. You have to be brave and come out for crosses. And he talks as well about positioning and to always know where you are in the goal and to always be thinking about angles and getting better at spotting angles. So he absolutely applied a real intellect to his craft. That is what made Banks, or one of the things that made Banks great.
You know, some of the things you talk about there about using smaller balls or being sort of multi-sport orientated, these are the things that are coming back in fashion. Now, you look at any sort of training session, especially, I mean, if you look at the ones that are put up on Instagrams and things like that, where you see like tennis balls being hit at goalkeepers, sort of medicine balls being used, sort of different weights of balls, different size of balls. And also, like I said, with the multi-sports, with table tennis, that's what we're trying to do now. We're trying to, instead of being too specialist and being too predictable, in goalkeeping coaching these days, you've got to try and create the chaos that happens inside the game so that you're ready and your thought processes aren't surprised by what's happening in front of you.
Yeah. I mean, look, you can imagine, in his era, imagine him chatting with Jack Charlton on the bus and saying, I'm playing lots of table tennis to try and sharpen up my reflexes. You know, there would have been a general what?
there's always been people who've thought more about the game than others. And like I said, for a goalkeeper, you have to think like that, because you're not just reacting off something that's being forced on you in your vicinity. You have got to really think about the game and think more about your positions and anticipate a little bit more.
Yeah. By the way, Jack Charlton fans, I don't want to diminish his achievements. He was obviously a thinker about the game in his own way, in fairness to him. So what else about Banks' game? I mean, the pass-back rule obviously hadn't come in then, so he wouldn't have had to be good with his feet as such. He's not renowned for his kickouts or anything like that, is he?
No, but I think when people talk about, we've already talked about his position and being a strength, but when we talk about his most of his strengths, it reads like an index of, you know, what it takes to be a world-class goalkeeper. And I think one thing that a lot of people have spoke about who played with him and against him spoke about was that, yes, he was an extremely nice guy and a very humble guy, but he had the mental strength that all goalkeepers need to succeed, and he was a very strong character. And okay, he might not have made as many mistakes as anyone else, but that focus, that steely resolution not to be beaten, that's something it's very difficult to teach.
Yeah, no doubt. David, while you're talking to us, it's been another devastating 30 seconds from PSG, Kenny. This attack went from back to front very quickly.
Yeah, this is a brilliant goal from PSG. United trying to put a bit of a squeeze on PSG in their own half of the pitch, but they don't panic. They play one touch. Matic gets himself a little bit drawn high up the pitch, that little pocket of space in behind him again. They work the ball in there, eventually out to the feet of Di Maria on the left-hand side. He plays a wonderful pass just across the six-yard box. De Gea then can come out. The defenders are struggling, sliding in. Don't even want to touch the ball. Probably worried about they're going to touch a pass their goalkeeper into the net. And Mbappe just attacks the space. Yeah. One touch, finish the inside of his right foot. But a brilliantly constructed goal.
It is a brilliant goal. Di Maria to Mbappe once again. So PSG 2-0 up at Old Trafford. That's worrying now. 61 minutes on the clock for Manchester United. What effect do you think he had then, David, on goalkeeping, if any? I mean, I know it can be tempting when someone passes away to overdo it and overextend their legacy, but it does feel like Banks had a legacy.
Yeah, certainly, and I think he had an immediate legacy, really, even before he hung up his gloves, because, you know, I don't know if you probably heard Peter Shilton talking about him today, and he was a massive influence on Peter Shilton's career and him wanting to be a goalkeeper, and you know, like I said, his legacy was immediate in Peter Shilton's emergence as a world-class goalkeeper himself. I think that, yeah, sometimes, you know, likes of Manuel Neuer, people say that he reinvented the position, but he didn't really. He just did it better than anyone else. Mm. And Gordon Banks was one of those people. And I think that when we talk about Gordon Banks, we can talk about him in the same light as Cruyff, Maradona, Pelé, and Lev Yashin, because he was that good. And it's crazy to think now that he was surplus to requirements a year after he won the World Cup at Leicester and sent to Stoke. And I think it's probably, listening to him talk, you probably think it was a little bit disappointing. He didn't play for one of the perceived big clubs. You know, he talks about Liverpool perhaps have been interested in for him as well, but I think he deserved to be playing at the very highest level at club football as well.
And why wasn't he, do we know, or did he ever give an explanation?
I think, I mean, the Liverpool move, I think later in time, he spoke to Bill Shankly, and Shankly said that he was denied the funds to bring him in, but
right.
At that time as well, you have to think that there was a lot of good goalkeepers around as well, and it wasn't a position that's like he says about would he want to have moved and play abroad when he was playing. Well, it just didn't happen at that time for goalkeepers.
Okay, I mean, fascinating stuff. I hadn't realised we were putting him into that echelon that you've mentioned, those players that you listed off. Obviously, I knew we were talking about an exceptional player, but that is ridiculously high praise.
It is. I mean, if you just think yourself, you know, you think of somebody like Lev Yashin, who's almost a mythical figure, simply because there's not a great deal of footage around about him, but we only hear the stories about him. But yeah, you put him up with Lev Yashin, you put him up with everyone else, and I don't see why not. You know, he's a World Cup winner as much as any of them are. I mean, you know, I think it's something like Cruyff has influenced the game so much, but he wasn't a World Cup winner either, was he?
No. He was pretty good, though. Listen, David, always great to have you on. Thanks so much for that.
Yeah, no problem. Cheers.
Cheers. David Priest there, giving us his very educated take on Gordon Banks. High praise indeed.
Yeah, from your peers, I think it always kind of resonates a little bit more. It's more appreciated.
So, a touch distracted talking to David there because you're watching Manchester United's Champions League ambitions end, effectively. So the corner happened, and then the general run of play after the corner. Were United top or falling back? Or were they United were pushing?
Yeah, on the ropes.
Right.
Ever since the goal, they've looked if they've lost a little bit of confidence. Actually looking a little bit leggy. I think maybe confidence comes into that a little bit. Even the second goal, I mean, they actually did try and press a little bit 10, 15 yards into the PSG half, but they don't look quite as cohesive in terms of going at, after the ball. It looks a little bit instinctive. Everybody may be doing their own thing a little bit, and PSG just playing those clever little 1-2 touches around the corner, got into that space in behind, eventually worked out to Di Maria. Wonderful pass into the box, and obviously Mbappe finishing should have ended it, literally ended a tie. Mbappe a few minutes ago, just a ball played in behind the United back four close to the halfway line. He's just run away from Lindelof into the penalty box, probably got himself too close to De Gea.
Yeah.
Tried to be a little bit clever and kind of lift it over him. De Gea read it and it was a simple save, but that was it. I mean, that was the tie there, put to bed at 3-0. It was all over, no way back for United, but they're hanging, they're really hanging in at the moment. Yeah.
To be hypercritical for a moment, okay, so he loses Martial and Lingard, which is a massive blow. I wonder, does, and look, when they lose, obviously it's going to strengthen the argument, but I wonder, is there an argument that you should have put on Lukaku and put Rashford out wide right and you have Sanchez on the left, because it's been such a cohesive team selection from Solskjaer over the last couple of weeks. They've all got very used to playing with each other, and at times it has been Lukaku through the middle and Rashford and Martial either side of him, or even Mata. Just, you have a lot of new combinations there in a sense, with Sanchez on and Mata and Rashford, and you could have actually limited the extent of the changes. You could have had Lukaku and Rashford doing what he's done on several occasions, and then there only would have been one newbie out there, I suppose.
Yeah, I understand the point you're making. I think it's a fair one in terms of the cohesion of the team, particularly out of possession of the football. And in fact, there's been a couple of times Matt has picked the ball second half, just kind of on the that inside right channel. He's kind of just chopped it onto his left foot, mm-hmm. and put a couple of decent crosses into the box, into a central area. Where you're, and then now you think, well, who's arriving? And it's kind of Sanchez and Rashford, as opposed to maybe Lukaku being that real physical option. Yeah, put it in there, all go and smash the centre half and put it into the back of the net. But I don't think that's a huge point, Joe. I think it's a fair one that you make, but I think their problems are kind of bigger than that. Like I said, I think they've really got a grip of the game in central midfield at PSG, and really start popping the ball around quickly, 1-2 touch, really, really up their game a little bit. And United have just looked a little bit off, little bit rapid, caught in the headlights in terms of, what's happening here. Mm. Even we spoke about Matic first half and how important he is to United in that kind of that defensive cog position in front of the back four. And he's got dragged out a little bit into forward areas of the pitch, and they've worked the ball into that space in behind and got at that Manchester United back four. And they've looked really nervous, a little bit unsure of themselves, which we haven't seen really for since Solskjaer walked in the door. Of course, the quality opposition is a factor, but they just look a little bit out of sorts at the moment, not playing with that kind of confidence and assurance, that little bit of a strut which we've seen from Manchester United of late, particularly in possession.
Okay, 23 minutes to go as David Beckham looks on from the crowd at Old Trafford. Short break.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the new Boyle Sports app. Bet €10 and get a free Now TV Sports Mobile Month Pass, showing exclusive darts and Premier League action.
Now then, you're welcome back. If you're just tuning in, the news from Old Trafford, Manchester United fans, is not good. PSG 2, Manchester United 0. It was half time and nil all. And then Di Maria with an in-swinger in corner to Mbappe was volleyed home. And then other side of the pitch, an outswinging cross, a brilliant cross from Di Maria, really, on a bit of a counter-attack. Was finished off by Neymar, by Mbappe. I'm sort of distracted again because here come PSG and they've got 2, 3, 4 flooding forward. United are flooding back as well. But they've been good, PSG, you have to say, Kenny. I mean,
second half, they've really upped it. I wouldn't say they played in themselves. They kind of stuttered a little bit, first half, but had the better moments in the first half when they did get their passing game going in the United half, kind of 1-2 touch, incisive pass, and they got themselves in beyond the Manchester United back line. Manchester United really never managed to do that first half. One great bit of skill from Pogba down the line, kidding on Mbembe, and half dangerous cross into the box. That was it. But second half, they've really grown into the game. PSG really begun to assert themselves. And United have just looked a little bit uncomfortable in this game against such opposition. Have almost lost a little bit of confidence in themselves as the half's gone on. And they've just grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck, PSG. They really have.
Mm, okay. So 2-0, 72 minutes on the clock. Now, I mean, a fairly seismic result from a Chelsea point of view over the weekend. Man City put in six on them. We brought you that game live here just to give you a sense of what Brian Kerr thought. He was on co-commentary for us. He had a chat with Nathan at full time just to have, really a natter about how much trouble Chelsea are in and how Brian sees the rest of the league campaign going. So have a listen here.
Well, what a performance we've just witnessed from Manchester City. A 6-0 win against Chelsea. Brian, have you ever seen a performance like that from a Premier League team?
I can't remember if I have, Nathan. Particularly against a team of the quality of Chelsea, who are one of their rivals. Not for the league this year, but certainly a team who we would expect to be there and thereabouts. Chelsea going into the game today on 50 points. They'd lost five games previously. Not in great form when you think they were beaten 4-0 by Bournemouth in the last away game. And won 5-0 at Huddersfield last week. Beaten 2-0 at Arsenal in the previous away game. So obviously they're a bit brittle in their away performances. But still, that was a sensational performance by Manchester City.
And What was it?
I was going to say, you wonder who's going to be able to take points off them. But, you know, somebody will be able to take points off them. And maybe the way to play them is that how Newcastle played in terms of sitting in and playing on the counter-attack and waiting for your couple of chances, as Crystal Palace did when they won 4-3. What was it today? They got off to a very good start once again. Not a goal in the first minute this time. A goal after 3.5 minutes. Poor by Chelsea. Marcus Alonso moving inside, the weight was left back spot before the free kick was taken and not ensuring that there was someone in the left back position. Hazard was kind of half there but wasn't there to stop the pass into Bernardo Silva's feet after that. The cutback led to Sterling scoring, and then the second goal was just a sensational goal by Aguero, having missed an easier one a bit earlier. And after that, the game became even more open. And it was just the brilliance, the individual brilliance and the collective understanding and awareness of where each other are, where the positions, the movement of positions to find space. But Chelsea did make it easy for them. I mean, Aspilicueta struggled against Sterling. Aguero got man of the match, probably rightfully so. But Sterling wouldn't have been too far behind him. He was involved in many of the goals. His running, direct running, his speed and pace was causing trouble all the time for Chelsea. But for Chelsea's midfield didn't do their jobs. Jorginho didn't do his job. Kante did all right, got about as well he could, but there wasn't an understanding between Barkley, Kante and Jorginho of how to deal with Manchester City's midfield.
Was their job? How Sarri set them up, what did he want them to do?
I don't know specifically. I think I've not been critical in saying that of him. I think his approach is we should dominate the ball, and he wants Jorginho to receive the ball from the back four players into the middle position and then set it up and move it on into Hazard's feet, get Higuain linking up but also running in behind the defence. Pedro is a runner in behind as well and a dribbler with the ball. But the problem was that their midfield three against their three direct opponents, Gundogan and Fernandinho, that they didn't match them at all. They weren't in positions to affect them when they were receiving the ball. They were always under pressure. And then Aguero was dropping short off the front, off the centre forwards, receiving the ball into his feet, in space behind Jorginho as well. So Jorginho didn't really affect anyone off the Chelsea team as I felt he should. But, you know, when you lose two goals early on, then it's a bit of a chase. And they were open, but they just weren't able to. It's hard to see what team would deal with them on the form that Manchester City were in today. But as the fixtures go on, you know, I think one of the biggest games of all will be when Spurs eventually come here. Because whether Spurs are still in contention at that time or not, but if Liverpool, you would think, will still be in contention, and they will be hoping that Spurs might be able to do a job. Their record here, 14 wins, one defeat. The goals they've scored, 51 goals. It's marvellous.
9 times this season now they've scored 5 or more goals in a game as well. It's quite ridiculous what they're doing. And another Sunday, second Sunday in a row, we're simply left purring at the brilliance of Sergio Aguero. His first goal today was one of the goals of the season. He's now on 11 hat-tricks in the Premier League, equal with Alan Shearer, seen as the greatest Premier League striker of all. It's very hard to rank players because different eras, different types of strikers. But what Aguero's done over the last couple of seasons, considering there were question marks when Pep Guardiola came in as to whether or not Guardiola really fancied him, if he was his type of striker, what has he done to make himself, it seems, be even better at 30 than he's ever been before?
Well, he's made himself into a more effective team player. I mean, Guardiola demands huge effort from the front players in terms of retrieving the ball, in terms of pressurising the opposition, not allowing them to set on the ball. And Aguero has had to adapt a little bit to that. In the previous eras, he before Pep, he didn't have to do that so much. He was allowed play as a centre forward, sometimes playing off a big centre forward, sometimes playing off Edin Dzeko when he was here even. But he was allowed play as a kind of a sniffer, making runs in me. But the demands on him now, I mean, his part of his role today was to stop Jorginho, being the build-up player in midfield. And, you know, there was times in the game he was chasing back after Chelsea's midfield players, harassing them into mistakes. So that's where how his game has changed. But it hasn't decreased his effectiveness around the penalty area. If anything, he's probably become a bit harder to mark, because when he's chasing back at people, it means when the ball is retrieved, he's obviously in a space. He's not in the natural, normal centre-forward's position in between two big centre-halves. He's picking the ball up outside the edge of the box, releasing it early off into the two wide speedy merchants, and then arriving into the box late, usually with deadly effect.
It was Chelsea's biggest ever Premier League defeat. Maurizio Sarri looked, well, understandably so frustrated on the sideline. Didn't shake hands with Pep Guardiola at the end of the game, just went straight down the tunnel. It's all falling apart for Chelsea at the moment, though they are still in three competitions. They have the Carabao Cup final to come, they've Manchester United to come in the FA Cup, and they're still in the Europa League. Does that make it more or less likely that they may actually choose to change manager right now? Do you think a change of manager could give this Chelsea group a bounce for the final 3 months of the season?
Well, the decision makers in the club have backed Sarri in terms of bringing in Higuain, because he obviously didn't fancy Morata, and he doesn't fancy Giroud either. He doesn't see them as consistent goal scorers. And Morata's confidence had drained away over this season. And they've moved him on. So they backed him in getting him, and they backed him in taking in Jorginho for a huge sum of money from Napoli as well. So it would seem a bit odd, but not unlike Chelsea, though, to get rid of a manager when things aren't going well. We've seen it before with other managers. We haven't been slow to get rid of Mourinho twice, and in the past, it generally works in the next season. Sometimes they brought in someone like Benitez and Gus Hiddink, and they kept things going, and they won cup competitions in the latter part of the season. But Hiddink didn't want to stay on in the job. Benitez would have, but the supporters probably didn't fancy Benitez, and there wasn't a great vibe around the club at the time, so they moved him out. Conte talked himself into being sacked anyway. So, you know, they have a history, but it must be getting a bit hairy for him now with those three successive defeats in the league, 2-0, 4-0, 6-0. You know, it can't be 8 against Bournemouth. But
players still playing for him?
If he can hang, I would say the players are still playing for him. I don't think he's doing himself any favour by being critical and saying a few... I thought he said a couple of silly things about Hazard, and I think in the position where Hazard is iffy about whether he's going to stay or not, I think he needs to say positive things about him all the time. I don't see any sign of what became obvious in Marino's latter days and towards the end of Conte's era as well, where the players have got fed up with the manager and are thrown in the towel. I don't think that's the case as yet. But he needs results to turn in his favour at the moment, or he won't be there next season. Chelsea don't mess about when, certainly when it comes to the summer. Sometimes they wait till the summer, sometimes they don't. So he's under pressure.
Yeah, he sure is. The word in all the newspapers this morning is that he has about a month to convince the board. And they have a huge month coming up. They have Manchester United in the FA Cup on Friday. They have Manchester City in the League Cup final. They have one or two other big games, Chelsea, and they figure they'll make a decision at the end of this month. So, I don't know, Kenny. Sarri ball and all that. there's a point where I look at poor old N'Golo Kante out there, not tackling anybody, and I look at Jorginho being sidestepped all around him, and I think maybe Sarri ball's just a bit too smart for his own good.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not sure this Sarri ball thing is... get a bit fed up with it now, to be honest with you. Like, you know, I mean, it's a 4-3-3. It's not something we haven't seen before. They're playing 4-3-3 with a holding midfielder. They want to play the ball.
It's a new type of football invented by Maurizio Sarri.
But this is what I'm talking about. But yeah, for me, that's kind of ridiculous. So the problems Chelsea are experiencing at the moment and the friendlies in the game from there all season, even after a particularly good start to the season, I was watching them play and looking at Jorginho in particular and David Luiz and Alonso straight away thinking, well, they're playing well, get some good results, but oh, I'm uneasy. Every time I looked at Jorginho move across the pitch when they hadn't got the ball, I thought, oh no, he can't run. He can't run. He doesn't look to have a defensive mindset. No physical presence. Doesn't anticipate danger. He's not going to give a particularly good screen to that back four. And the problem with that back four, I've said it again, I'm probably repeating myself, it's porous. In David Luiz, he got one of the best ball-playing centre-halves, who to me... doesn't look as if he particularly enjoys the defensive side to the game. He doesn't sense danger. He's reckless. Alonso, fantastic going forward in terms of goals and assists. But again, defensively for me, weak. Got a problem in terms of positioning. His movement, sadly, for the first goal, it was extraordinary. I've never seen that like it. In terms of like running onto the inside towards David Luiz before the free kick was taken. I just don't know what he's doing. Sometimes you say, oh, well, potentially maybe he was doing this. He saw this danger. I just have no idea. I was still scratching my head afterwards.
Yeah.
So for me, Chelsea's problems aren't going to stop until he makes it. He doesn't have to change his whole philosophy. What he's got to do is he's got to take Jorginho out of the team. He's got to drop Kante into the holding midfield position. Kante can receive the ball.
Sorry, you've just taken the words out of my mouth. The way this whole thing has been framed, it's as if N'Golo Kante is just going to boot the ball out of touch every time he gets the ball. Yeah. Like, it has to be Jorginho. He's this absolutely incredible ball player.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't seen Jorginho do these miraculous things yet. That Kante couldn't even.
And if you look at his assists, very poor as well, Jorginho. He's got a better rate of passing than Kante, but N'Golo Kante is very competent.
He can do enough, Kante.
Exactly. Yeah. And what he gives you on the flip side in terms of defensively, particularly with the problems they have across the defensive line, he has to be in there to give that kind of screen to David Luiz in particular and Alonso down that side of the pitch. So he's got to play.
Kenny, for the first time all evening, me and you. Could not agree with each other more.
Yeah, but it's not only that. For me, David Luiz has got to come out of the team. Young Christensen, for me, is the better defender. Again,
that upsets
as
me
good a ball player.
That upsets me a little bit. Is there no way, is there no way, Kenny, we can keep Luiz in? No?
No, not my team.
Come on.
No, not my, because these are the problems. Because you can talk about Higuain or bring a top-class centre-forward till the cows come home, where are you going to play Hazard? But until he resolves these problems in the centre, you can't challenge for a title for the big honours and play with a holding midfielder who can't defend.
No, I agree.
A left-sided centre-half you can trust.
Where was
and
Luiz?
A left-back who's totally indifferent to defending. Where so that whole axis of the team, that little kind of half triangle there,
yeah,
in a key area, you can't carry three players.
Did Luiz play when Kante won the league with him, though?
With Kante in front of him.
So that's what I'm saying. Let's just do that. Let's get Kante in front of him and leave Luiz in the team.
Well, that's the first thing I'm saying, Kante. For me, I play Christensen as well because you've got to change something at the moment. For me, you've got to get more solid. You've got to get a bit of confidence back into the team. You've got to start keeping a few more clean sheets. So for me, that's the answer.
But not to nitpick. You said you can't win a league with Luiz there, but you sort
Jorginho,
of
can. Jorginho, Luiz and Alonso. That's on top of them three. Forget it.
If we take Jorginho out and put in Kante, we can keep Luiz.
That's better.
Yeah.
I wouldn't keep him. Yeah, make it easier.
We can still win a league,
make it easier because Kante will do his job for him, which he did in the defence winning season. Because he'd end up dropping into centre-half. He'd drop into the space between left-back and centre-half. David Luiz didn't have to leave that near post area. Jorginho hasn't got the legs to drop into those little gullies in between centre-half and full-back and give him a dig-out as he did previously. So David Luiz now is getting more exposed. Look at all the goals Chelsea have conceded this season. I would say at least 75% of the goals you'd be talking about Jorginho, David Luiz and Alonso.
Okay.
In terms of how better they could have done. I haven't watched all the goals, but that's what my gut feeling tells me. That's what I'm seeing.
Look, I know you're right. I've just got a...
So he's got to do that.
I've just got a soft spot for Luiz.
His hair. Right. You've got a soft spot for his hair. Look, I'm not talking to play the lad can't play. He's a wonderful ball playing centre half, but I don't trust him. I don't trust him in terms of his defensive capabilities at centre half. And you can get around it. You put Kante in front of him, you can put a left back in alongside him who can defend. You get people around him, you can kind of protect him to a point, which they have done previously. But at the moment, he's been exposed because of Alonso and the inadequacies of Jorginho in front of him. that's exactly what's happening. So that's crying out. And for me, it's not a, like a pig or a one. Now, this is my philosophy. Don't change the shape of the team. You can still play from back to front, play on the inside, play a lot of clever little passes if you want. But for me, Kante can still do that.
Yeah,
to no, a
I
point.
Yeah.
I mean, Christensen is reasonably comfortable with the ball in possession as well. So I don't think fundamentally the whole philosophy of the team has to change, but something has to change because this has happened far too often.
Yeah.
And the reasons are there staring you in the face.
Yeah, no, totally agree. To a point. I'm Louise is staying in my team, everyone. Don't worry about that. still 2-0 at Old Trafford. 3 minutes to go. It's a tall order to go to Paris with no goals. Even if they could just nick one Manchester United, they might go there and try and muster up something. But 2-0, you really have to feel PSG have this one in the bag. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, arms folded, looking on.
Yeah, I think it's over. And it was particularly injuries as well. Lingard and Martial may not get them back. And second half in particular, they've really kind of, they've dominated. Joe, second half, they really have, and you like it. You know, they've looked really unsure of themselves. You know, we haven't seen 45 minutes from that from Manchester. Maybe Burnley, something might say, saw bits that game, maybe not not quite at it, but they've been really dominant PSG. They've really stepped up second half, and United have really had no answer to them.
It's true. By the way, we mentioned the League of Ireland launch was this afternoon. Cork manager John Caulfield was there and very much making the point that he hopes this season is going to be more than just a two-horse race. Have a quick listen.
Obviously, I think everyone hopes it isn't going to be that way. There's going to be a lot more teams involved. You know, obviously, the Dundalker team to beat, they've, you know, kept all their players, their management team, Vinnie Pert and Rory Higgins, obviously John Gill is coming as well. They've been with the club for the last number of years, so it's a smooth transition for them, really, and they're the team to beat. For us, we've lost 9 players from last year. We've a lot of new players brought in, so we hope to be very competitive. But obviously, Shamrock Rovers and Stephen's experience, the fact he's there now for his third year, you know, and the players he's brought in, McAniff and Jack Byrne coming back, you know, has given them a team that you expect to challenge. And obviously, Derry have invested, St. Pat's have invested. So I think overall, everyone in the league would hope that there's going to be 4 or 5 teams competing. But, you know, from my point of view, you know, we need to do the best we can out of Cork. But Dundalk are certainly the team to beat.
You mentioned losing players. Is Kieran Sadler, is he the one that leaves the biggest void, do you think, in your team?
Well, to be honest with you, I suppose if you look at goals, you know, Kieran got in the league last year, he had 16 goals. So, you know, from that point of view, he was a very creative player, very good player for us. But, you know, overall, we've lost, you know, Jimmy Cohan, Barry McNamee, Stephen Beattie, you know, Johnny Dunleavy. But lots of experienced lads who have been with the club for a number of years. So, you know, it all probably takes its toll from that point of view. So, for me, it's just there's been a number of guys that we've lost, and that's just the way it is. And you just get on with it. And we brought a lot of new players in, and they're young and they're enthusiastic and they've trained very hard in pre-season, and they're all talented players. So we're hoping that they'll gel very quickly.
And I suppose like somebody like Alan Bennett, you know, his experience, that'll be really important this season when you have so many young players in the squad.
Yeah, it's one of those ones. I think, you know, the lads were saying the other day that we have 3 lads over 30, Mark McNulty, Alan Bennett and Graham Cummins. You know, most of the lads are the age between 19, 23, 24. And so, you know, a lot of them are coming through, but certainly we need Alan's experience, you know, not only at match night, but even around the ground during the week. And but he's already been like that, and he's a great guy. So, we need plenty of that. But, you know, we still a lot of talent with the younger lads, and we're just hoping that they can produce on the pitch every week.
You mentioned Graham Cummins there. Can he bang more goals in this year?
Yeah, I suppose that's a challenge. Graham got 14 last year from playing the league. You know, great return. He obviously was a little bit disappointed. He felt he could have got close to 20, but that's the challenge this year that hopefully he can, because certainly if you have a striker who can get you 20 goals, you're always going to be there, thereabouts. And, you know, the previous year, Shawnee had got 22 and then he left, you know, halfway through the season. Obviously, Patrick Holman got 29 last year. So if you get a striker that's in the 20 goal market, you have a right chance. So that'll be the challenge for Graham. And but we have other lads, you know, Carl Shepherd can play up top, and we've one or two new players coming in as well, so we'll see. But certainly you need goal scorers to have any chance in the league.
I read an interview you did, I think it was at the Irish Examiner, and you were talking about, you know, how hard it is to bring young players through, and you know that you have to give them, you have to have a bit of patience with them because they will make mistakes. You know, when you look at Turner's Cross and you pack in so many people there for all the home games, is that a bit of a challenge as well? Because You know, it's great having all those numbers there, but when players are making mistakes, that can, you know, sometimes generate a nervousness from the stands.
Absolutely, and that's the challenge for us this year, because we have had phenomenal support over the last 5 years. Crowds have been huge, and the expectations have been huge because we've been always challenging. And, you know, that is the challenge to the supporters, challenge to the management, to give the young players time, because they will make mistakes, but they have talent. But I suppose early indications, we played Dundalk in the President's Cup last Saturday. First half, Dundalk were really good, and they were 2-0 up. Second half, we played really well, got back to 2-1, possibly could have drawn the match. But I think our supporters, 3,000 on the day, saw that, you know, there was a lot of talent in the team. So, yeah, we just need to be patient. That's just the way it is.
Ah, sorry, apologies. So, we're back. That's John Caulfield. The fixtures for Friday, by the way, where things start off, St. Pat's are hosting Cork, first game. Waterford hosting Shamrock Rovers, Dundalk hosting Sligo, Derry City hosting UCD, and Bowes hosting Finn Harps. So we'll be covering the League of Ireland as usual here and Off the Ball across the season. We're pretty much done for time. Paul Pogba has been sent off for a second yellow. We should let people know it's still 2-0 to PSG against Manchester United. You said early on there was going to be a red card tonight. Pogba was an early candidate because he put in a few tackles.
Yeah, but this was an easy decision. Actually took me back to the Spurs game at Wembley some weeks ago. He made a tackle on Dele Alli. Hmm. And I remember, because it was hilarious, argument post-match between Jamie Redknapp and Souness. Redknapp was trying to make an argument for him. Oh, he was just trying to protect the ball, didn't mean it. Souness was like, done him. And he's done him.
Yeah.
And this is what, you know, that classic one, a player steps beyond the ball to try and protect the ball.
Yeah.
Well, the difference being, when you step beyond the ball and your studs are pointed to the ground, that's okay. But when you step over the ball and your studs are pointed directly at the player, that means you're actually lunging and you're actually putting the other player in danger. He did it to Alli and he got away with it. He did it again tonight and he didn't. It was a clear yellow card. You could argue even it was a straight red, to be honest.
Okay.
Bit frustration, obviously, rearing its head.
Caps off a tough night for Manchester United, where they went in with so much hope as favourites evening, but it's been a 2-0 loss ultimately. They're into injury time now. That's us pretty much done. If you missed our chat earlier with Paul Keoghan and you want to make a donation, the Irish Heart Foundation's Show Some Heart This Valentine's Day campaign continues. Go to irishheart.ie/donate. Tom Dunn's on the way. We've got a busy show tomorrow. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the new and improved Boyle Sports Bet Builder. Now with 44 markets to choose from on every match.